Welcome to VI Talk, sharing ideas, information, and support.
Hi everyone, it's Jo, and I have with me one of my fellow trustees, Justine Fallis. Hiya, Justine.
Good evening, Jo.
How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Yeah, I'm very well.
good. So Justine's here to take part in our eye condition series. We haven't done one of these for a while. So you've got quite a rare eye condition, haven't you?
I certainly have, yeah. It's not as rare as it used to be, but certainly when I was a little one, it was, I think I was only about one of three or four people with the condition.
Wow, gosh. So optic nerve hyperplasia.
Exactly.
So from now on in, we're going to call it ONH to make my life easier.
Yeah, absolutely.
So do you want to tell us a little bit about the eye condition first?
Yeah, okay. So as far as I understand it, and from what we've been told, it is where the optic nerve doesn't develop properly. Now, the optic nerve, I once had it described to me as like a long piece of, if you like, elastic. And it normally would be attached to the brain, but mine isn't attached to the brain and it hasn't grown properly in my brain. So my eyes themselves have nothing, you know, amiss with them. My eyes look perfectly, I hate the word normal, but they look perfectly formed and everything like that, apart from having nystagmus, which I'll touch on more in a minute. But the optic nerve that, if you like, sends the message from the brain to the eye or the eye to the brain is kaput, so to speak.
Okay. So, was that caused by you being premature, or was that just one of those things?
No. They think it was a faulty gene. It's not genetic, but it just, my mum and dad both had faulty genes at the time. And because I've got other siblings who are perfectly, you know, their eyesight is perfectly fine. I am the only one. So, yeah, it just happened to be a faulty gene somewhere along the line.
Right. So at what point did your family, your parents realise that you had an eye condition? Were they told sort of straight away, or?
I think it was about when I was about sort of 3-4 months old, and I would respond to sound. I would respond to bright lights, but I wouldn't respond to, you know, if someone put a hand in front of me or, you know, walked up to me and I sort of didn't hear them coming, I wouldn't respond. So I wasn't sort of focusing. Plus my eyes moved around. And of course my mum, when she had me, was only 17. So her and my grandmother at the time went to the doctor. There's something wrong. My nan was quite passionate and rowed with doctors at Moorfields. My nan thought that they could cure me, but in the end I went to Great Ormond Street Hospital, and there was a doctor over here from India who had come across the condition, I think in the States, and he looked at my eyes and just said, he was a young student doctor, and he said, this is what I think she's got.
Right. Oh, that's interesting,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and as I say, at the time, I was one of only, I think it was 3 or 4 people in the world. I think it was a couple more in, it might have been 5 actually, there was a couple more in the US, but over here, there was only a couple of us.
Right. So how did that affect you growing up? Did you go, I know you went through specialist education, but so how did it affect you growing up, do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, one of the things with ONH, it can have other implications. As I said, nystagmus. So my eyes involuntarily move. I can't tell they're moving. Sometimes kids could be quiet because I look like I'm, if you like, cross-eyed, and young kids could be quite nasty about that. But on the whole, I was sort of quite a, you know, reasonably sociable kid. Quite studious, quite obsessive about things. I could see light and dark, but yeah, I went off to specialist school when I was 6, and you know, did my education, and that wasn't too bad. I mean, I was lucky because one of the things it can do is affect your pituitary gland and your growth hormones. It can also manifest itself in other disabilities as well. Autism, which I've just been diagnosed with, but also things like epilepsy, growth issues, growth hormone issues. Some people end up having to have growth hormone injections. I was fortunate that I didn't ever have to go through that. My growth spurt was, you know, normal for my age. But it also, it can affect your sense of smell. It can affect your weight, which it did with me. but yeah, on the whole, you know, I lived a reasonably, you know, active life, really.
Yeah, yeah. And do you think it's had, I know you said you've just had a diagnosis of autism, which took you quite a long time to kind of get, didn't it?
Yes, it did.
Has that given you some sort of peace of mind, or is it just knowing that that's the case?
It has. I mean, it's not changed anything per se, but it explains a lot. I mean, as growing up, right through childhood into adulthood, I had various obsessions, one of them being bare arms, as in the part of the body, the arm.
Always like to stroke it.
Right to bare arms. No, I always like stroking arms. Things like I would get really fixated on different things. So, for example, when I was young, I had a, you know, those old tobacco tins you could get if you had a tin of tobacco.
Yeah.
And my granddad had one, and he gave me the tin box, and I just became fixated on this tin box. And I used to carry it around everywhere with me. And I called it Jock. Yeah, don't ask. And I did become, and all through sort of my childhood and later on into adult life, I've become sort of quite fixated and obsessed with things and quite a, I would play with kids, but I sometimes liked sort of my own company when I was playing, or I sort of found, you know, I didn't like kids touching my things, or I was quite possessive over, you know, my property. Yeah. And I think, you know, when I look back at it now, and sort of even now, you know, now sort of in later life, I think it does explain a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. So, but you've worked and you've done lots of voluntary work. I mean, you're volunteering for VI Talk at the moment as a trustee or our secretary.
I am, yeah.
It's for your sins. and you do radio. Which
you've done
previously as well. But you've had a variety of jobs, haven't you, over the years?
I have. I mean, I have been very fortunate. You know, I've worked as a medical secretary. I've worked as a disability rights advocate, an advisor. I've done advice work, events coordinating, sort of charity work. So, yeah, I've had a variety of jobs over the years.
Yeah, so you definitely haven't had it stand in your way, have
you? No, and I've been, like I said, I've been fortunate that I've always been encouraged to do stuff, and I've always been, you know, a bit of a get-up-and-go type person. And like I said, I've been lucky that I haven't had some of the additional disabilities that, you know, are or can be associated with ONH.
Yeah. So you said when you were born, there were only about 5 or 6 people in the world with your condition, and that's now more. Do you know why that is? And if you don't, that's fine. But I wonder if it all, is it, do you think, that it just wasn't known about as much?
Yeah, I think it just weren't. No, I mean, and even now it's reasonably rare. You know, even now it's sort of, I mean, there are a lot more, when I say there's no cure for it, but there are a lot more, well, I say there's no cure. There is a stem cell treatment that has helped some people. But that's quite a big, you know, that's available in China, I believe. But yeah, there are, you know, more, if you like, there is more known about it, and sort of people, there are, you know, people can sort of take different medications to assist with it. I guess, yeah, back then, you know, it just wasn't known about. I mean, autism, for example, I don't think was really heard of, or if it was, it was, you know, very sort of hush hush when I was born in the 70s, whereas now it's much more, I don't think trendy is the right word, but it's much more sort of talked about, isn't it?
It is. You know, people,
and And the same with ONH. I think people, you know, it is more sort of common, you know, more common. And I think, you know, doctors know more about it. There's sort of endocrinology, endocrinological treatments available, sort of growth hormones. I mean, I was at school with people that had growth hormones and probably and had the condition, but I didn't know that they had it at the time. I just knew that they had growth hormone injections. I didn't really put two and two together. Whereas now, you know, I was like, oh yeah, okay, that's what, you know. Because there is also a similar condition that's very similar, and it's more to do with the pituitary gland and the hormones, but it's called septo-optic dysplasia, and it's very similar, but I don't know as much about that as ONH. They are very similar, though.
But
I've got bilateral ONH, which means basically that neither of my eyes, well, apart from light perception, neither of them work.
So what would be your sort of, if anybody has your eye condition and perhaps they're, you know, new to it, they're quite young, maybe, what would your advice be? Have you got any top tips?
Gosh, I think just, you know, do as much as you can, obviously within the limitations of your own disability, because like I said, some people do have additional needs with it. But that's not to say that, you know, that some can do more than others, but also to recognize that, you know, if someone else can do something and you can't, it's just because, you know, the condition has affected you sort of differently. But if you're like me and can do things, then just give it a bash, really, and do what you can. I mean, back in my, when I was little, we didn't have the MRI treatments. I remember having a needle stuck in my brain to get fluid off the brain to put fluid on the brain to see what was going on. Whereas now you'd have an MRI to kind of test, you know, if you had NOH and ONH and what was going on there.
That's quite scary treatment, isn't it? That must have been quite scary for your mum. That must have been, you know, seeing you go through things like that as a youngster must have been quite difficult. How do you think your family coped with it well?
I mean, luckily she had quite a big family and a supportive family, so that, you know, I mean, back then she was told to put me in a home, you know, the usual. But, you know, luckily, you know, the family kind of stuck by her and stuck by me, I guess. But yeah, I mean, with that particular treatment, apparently they put this fluid sort of onto my, you know, needle. It was like a lumbar puncture, actually. That's what they did. They put the needle in my back, so it was a lumbar puncture, to put this sort of dye on my brain to sort of, if you like, I suppose it was like a scan, really, back then. And I got a really bad headache because of it, and was screaming. I had all this yellow dye coming out of my nose, and I mean, I don't remember a thing, but
no.
I imagine, you know, I was only a baby in arms, but
So are you the eldest of your
you
and your siblings?
I am.
And do you think that had any, you know, impact on you as you know, a family, or, you know, you having been born with a sight condition?
Close, they've never known any different. I mean, I was always away at boarding school, so I was a bit like the, you know, I was sort of, my friends were all at boarding school and stuff, so I've always sort of lived away from home and even left home when I was 18. But no, I mean, that, you know, it was what they've always known, really, you know, siblings, cousins, so it wasn't a sort of a different thing, really.
And what does the future hold for Justine?
Oh my goodness, wow.
Big question.
Well, I don't know, I'm 50 next year, so life goes downhill from there, doesn't it, really?
I think
just to carry on as I am, really, and, you know, just keep doing what I'm doing, really. You know, I know I've got the condition, I've lived with it for 49 years, and just to keep going, really.
Fabulous. Thank you very much, Justine.
My pleasure.
For chatting to me.
That's all right.